Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 154 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com as well. Log on to normantranscript.com, check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Wednesday episode today, the Thunder just beat the Utah Jazz 109-106 at home. Really fun game. Super fun game. The Thunder made their first 12 threes, first team in 19 years to make 12 threes in a row to start a basketball game. The last team was, well, same franchise, different team. The Sonics did it in 1998, January of 1998 against Washington. The Sonics did it. This time it was the Thunder, who came into the game 30th in the NBA in three-point percentage and made their first 12 threes of the game. McDermott made a few, and Westbrook made a few, and Jeremy Grant made one, and Abrines made a few, and it's like everybody was on fire. It was unbelievable how they were just chucking up, and everything went in. Westbrook had 43 points, 11 boards, 10 assists, 12 points in the last 2 minutes, 14 points in the fourth quarter, 18 points in the first quarter. He had a stretch where at the end of the first quarter when he had 18 points, he had 39 points in his previous two quarters played, which is over 18 minutes of him actually being on the floor, which I thought the amazing stat from that was just that everybody said that his all-star points weren't legit, and they obviously weren't. No one's all-star points were legitimate. Even like DeMarcus Cousins, who played 2 minutes. I don't even remember if he scored, but anyone whoever had the fewest amount of points in the all-star game, those points were legitimate. It was, that game is unwatchable and horrible, and there's no defense and no effort, and it's just awful. So no, Westbrook's points there weren't legitimate, but to put in perspective what he did over a two-quarter period, in that All-Star game when he was like trying to score like crazy, and when they were all trying to get Anthony Davis the MVP and Russ was just like, nah, he had 41 points in 19 and a fraction minutes. And in this game, against NBA competition, if you include the first quarter of the Utah game and the fourth quarter of the previous game, which was Sunday against the Pelicans, he had 39 points in 18 minutes. He was so on fire to start this game, and he was so on fire in the fourth quarter of that New Orleans game. Man, he was making everything. He was getting to the rim, he was doing everything, and he was making all his jump shots. And everyone was making their jump shots. The Thunder were near perfect in the first half offensively. I mean, they were so good in the first half offensively. It was amazing. They were only up eight. You know, Billy Donovan had no idea they made their first 12 threes. He said to me after the game, after his podium, because I told him that they were the first team to do that in 19 years. And he was like, that's amazing. He told me he didn't even know. The way he phrased it was, I didn't even realize till I looked at the stat sheet that we were 12 for 13 in the first half. And I was like, no, Billy, it wasn't that. They were 12 for 13. You mean 12 straight. And then Russ missed a three on a 2-for-1 at the end of the second quarter. Could have easily been 12 for 12 from three heading into the third quarter, which really would have been something. They finished 15 of 22 there, by the way. They kind of regressed in the second half, which is to be expected. But Westbrook made six of them. McDermott made four of them. Abrines made three of them. Robertson hit one. Grant hit one. They were coming from all over. By the end, though, it was Westbrook. They regressed in the second half, and Westbrook went off 12 points in the last 2 minutes. He had some unbelievable rebounds in the last couple of minutes of this game. I know he had the eight turnovers, and he had the sloppiness, and he had the errant passes and all of that, but he was unbelievable taking over in the fourth quarter of this game, which is, it's becoming character. You know, for all the talk of Russell Westbrook is normalizing triple-doubles, and he is, this is his 30th triple-double of the season. His next triple-double is going to tie Wilt Chamberlain at 31. Wilt Chamberlain at 31 in 1968. It's the most anybody's had since 1968. And his next triple-double is going to bring him to 31, which is an unbelievable thing. I didn't think anything close to this was anything realistic. And he's got 30 through 60 Thunder games right now, which means that he's on a pace for exactly 41, which is how many Oscar Robertson has when he set the record for most triple-doubles in a single season. So he's on pace to tie a triple-double record right now, which is an amazing thing. And for averaging a triple-double, that is just as impressive to me. If he could potentially get to the single-season record for most triple-doubles in a season, that would be an amazing thing. And the way we talk about how he's normalized the triple-double, him and James Harden too. James Harden's got a ton of them. And the fact that they've just kind of normalized the triple-double, we look at it and it's like, okay, he had another triple-double again. Russell Westbrook's had games this year where I thought he played terribly. And you look at it and he's got 25 points and 10 boards and 10 assists. And you're like, he played terribly. There's no question he played terribly. He's normalized the triple-double. Harden's done a similar thing. They've taken it beyond what we've seen in normal years in terms of just how we evaluate what a triple-double means because they're putting him up so much. But something that Westbrook has been doing now is he's been normalizing these fourth quarters where he's averaging like 57 points per 36 minutes in crunch time or whatever it is. The Thunder, in terms of net rating, are by far the best crunch time team in the NBA. And some of that has to do with sample size. Don't get me wrong. Some of that is definitely sample size because the Thunder are not by far the best team in the NBA. And it is, to some degree, a statistical anomaly whenever a team with a negative net rating has a net rating of plus 30 during crunch time scenarios. And it's clutch time, technically, which is how NBA.com defines it. Clutch time is when a game is within 5 points with five or fewer minutes left. And the Thunder have by far the best net rating. They're about plus 30 points per 100 possessions during clutch time moments, which is by far the best in the NBA. The Spurs are second. Like 11 points per 100 worse. Let's actually call this up so I can make sure the numbers are completely accurate. So after this Utah game, because I was looking at the numbers before, so after this Utah game, the Thunder are outscoring opponents by 28.4 points per 100 possessions in clutch time. 28.4. A lot of that has to do with the defense. They're one of the best defensive teams in the entire NBA in clutch time. As a matter of fact, they have the best defensive rating in the whole league in clutch time. So it's not just like, the answer is not as simple as Russell Westbrook takes over, so they're really good. And they have the second worst assist rate during clutch time too, which is not surprising because Russell Westbrook kind of hijacks the offense. And it's not for better or for worse, it's for better. The offense is excellent. But the defense is by far the best in the NBA. It's an interesting trend because you think they're so good in clutch time because Westbrook takes over. And that is obviously a major, major part of it. There's no doubt about that. But something I want to get down to the middle of, or the bottom two, or whatever the heck the expression is why is the defense so good in clutch time? Is it just the sample size? 122 minutes of play, and they just happen to be being really good in defense? Is that what it is? I don't know, but I don't know if there's something there. I don't know why the defense would be better in clutch time. It could be so much of this stuff. These numbers are so noisy. They're coming in against so many different teams in so many different scenarios and in such small individual sample sizes when they happen for a minute at a time. These numbers are so noisy. They can change so much. And it's hard to trust some of the stuff that you see with these sorts of numbers. But the Thunder are by far the best defensive team in clutch time. And that's one of the things we saw tonight. Look, we saw them come back from, they were up 13, they blew a lead. They were up 13, they blew a lead. They were up 94-81 with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And they fell down, Utah went on a 21-4 run. They fell down 102-98. Westbrook brought them back. But they also kind of locked down on defense in that time. Now, it could be that Billy Donovan goes defense in clutch time. He favors defense in clutch time, but that doesn't necessarily explain them being by far the best defensive team in clutch time during that time. Something that's worth diving into more. Maybe I'll do a piece on that later in this week. They are not practicing on Wednesday. If I could ask Billy Donovan that question on Wednesday, maybe I'd do a piece on that for Thursday. But if not, I'm just going to have to hope that none of my competing listeners listening to this podcast and get the idea and do it before me. Or competing writers, I should say. I really don't think they do. Royce, if you're listening to this, I judge you. I'm just letting you know that. Let's take a couple of Twitter questions before I go. First one, friend of the show, one or two or three-time guest, whatever it is, Andrew Schlecht of Down to Dunk, sent one in on Twitter, so I'm going to take it. What are your thoughts on Alex Abrines' potential? I responded to him that I think he can be an Art of Shaving model. Possible. Abrines has been good. I wrote a piece on Tuesday about the possibility of just starting him once Oladipo comes back, and there's still no update on Oladipo's back spasms. He did go through shoot-around on Tuesday, and he did go through some of his pregame warm-up, but he wasn't good to go, and he ended up sitting on Tuesday for the game. But they're winning without him. And I think part of it is because Abrines is really helping with his shooting. Dude's shooting better than 45% since December 21st. And this is not a small sample size anymore. This is a legitimate sample size. Alex Abrines is one of the best rookie shooters in the league. There's no question about that. He's been one of the best rookie shooters in the league. And the Anthony Morrow trade freed up minutes for him. You know, there were moments I thought he was playing better than Morrow, but there were moments where most of the time, Morrow would come in the game before him. Maybe by the end of the game, he'd have more minutes than Morrow. But he'd play 14 and Morrow would play 7. Now, especially with Oladipo out, with Oladipo not playing, he's getting those minutes. I don't know if he's ever going to be a defender. He's so slender. You can push him off. The Jazz were just bashing him on screens in this game. And that's one of the issues if you're going to start him. The defense is just not going to be the same as if you play with Oladipo, who's stronger and fights harder through screens, and fights harder on the ball, and is bigger in the chest, and he's longer. And the defense is just not going to be what you're going to have with Oladipo. And I don't know if he's ever really going to be a defender. But man, like the Thunder, I like that lineup that they ran on Sunday with Abrines and McDermott. I think that could work. They ran elevator doors for McDermott, which is basically two screen, two guys, and McDermott runs to the top of the key, two guys setting like a double screen next to each other. McDermott goes to the top of the three-point line, receives a pass, runs through off the ball. They ran that play for McDermott. I think it's the first time they ran that in like 2 months. I tweeted it was the first time I remember them running it. And a couple of people tweeted at me, reminded me. They've run it for Abrines a couple of times. And somebody tweeted at me, reminded me. They ran it for Anthony Morrow once. I remember this. Anthony Morrow tripped on the screener, and it didn't work. But that's something that like, if they can get him moving more, they ran that for McDermott. The Thunder don't have a lot of off-ball movement. They don't have a lot of off-ball screening, and it's something I talk about a lot. And he's not very fast, so I don't know if he's ever going to be J.J. Redick, Danny Green, Rip Hamilton, a guy who's just like this ultimate off-ball mover. I don't know if he's going to be that. I don't think he's going to be Anthony Morrow either, or he's going to be this stationary off-ball shooter either. I think he's probably going to be somewhere in between. But if the Thunder can work more down screens and flare screens to open up shooters into their line, into their schemes. And I don't think it's something that's going to happen this year because it's just, they're not going to totally change their identity because of Alex Abrines in the middle of the season. But just Alex Abrines moving forward, because Andrew asked about his potential. If he can be someone who can move a little bit more off the ball, like I don't see why he couldn't be a really, really solid contributor to a really, really good team. He's already good right now with the way that he shoots the ball. And he's got his flaws. But he's fluid. He's better around the rim than people give him credit for. He's not great around the rim. But it's not like he's this spot-up shooter who can only spot-up shoot. That's not the case. He had that really fluid reverse layup, which I don't know how the heck he made that. Every time he does something like that, I'm just like, oh, okay, and I kind of laugh. But I think Abrines is going to be a really solid contributor to a really good team. I think that's going to happen. And I think he's pretty close to on the way right now. I'm very interested to see what's going to happen when Oladipo comes back. I think Oladipo's going to start. Billy Donovan basically told me when I asked him about it on Monday what's going to happen. And he said relatively definitively Oladipo gets his spot back. And I don't blame him for that by any means. But I'm just interested to see what's going to happen with Abrines' minutes, because I do think he's got to get minutes with Westbrook, because I think Westbrook accentuates his shooting so much and does such a good job finding him when he's open and Oladipo's hitting these shots. He's giving Westbrook more space, and it just seems to be working, and I feel like he needs those minutes. He needs those minutes. He's positive right now. Next one from Dan Krutko. What's up with the big Kiwi? Seemed really off tonight. That's about Steven Adams. I think this answer is relatively short. He was off tonight. And I think there's a really obvious reason why he was off tonight. He had arguably the best defensive player in the NBA guarding him. Rudy Gobert is really, really good. Just crazy, crazy good. He might be the defense player of the year this year. He's crazy, crazy good. And is so hard to get off a shot. There was a point, I think it was the second quarter, where Adams had a shoulder right in Gobert. And I think if it were any other center guarding him, maybe save a couple. Maybe if it's like DeAndre Jordan, he does the same thing. But he had a shoulder in Gobert. And normally I think Adams goes up. Instead, he turned around and shot a hook shot. He was about a foot away from the basket. Instead, he shot a hook shot from about 4 feet. And I think that was just the Rudy Gobert effect. It was just Rudy Gobert is right there guarding you. The dude is maybe the best rim protector in all the NBA. So he was altering and he was uncomfortable. And I really think that was all of what it was. Because that's how guys play against Gobert. He's just that good. Next one from Kyler Hallmark. Where's this rank in the Thunder wins this season? So it's not as good as the Utah win at Utah, because the win over Utah in Utah is better than the win over Utah in Oklahoma City. It's a really good win. Utah's really good. Third in defense. The Thunder played a really good offensive game, even if they didn't quite make their threes in the second half. I mean, look, they shot 15 to 22 from three. It's not like they did all that much differently from three. They were making their shots. But look, Doug McDermott's a good offensive player who tends to get hot because he's a really good shooter, and he made 4 or 6 from three. Like, this is what happens when they have better players in their roster. This roster is better after this trade. It's just better. But it's not as good as the win at Utah. I don't think it's as good as the win at L.A., at the Clippers, when they were healthy at the very beginning of the year. It's not as good as the home Cleveland win. It's not as good as the home Houston win. But I think it probably follows that because of the way they finished. Because they played a good game. Played a really good game. They shot the heck out of the ball. They weren't great defensively. But they were good. Gordon Hayward's really good. Gordon Hayward's so good. He's so underrated. Where's he in the most underrated players in the NBA? Certainly one of the most. Does not get enough respect. That guy is freaking awesome. My goodness, he's so good. And he was like, I mean, he's been dunking on guys like crazy since the All-Star break. But like, man, when he gets those spot-up opportunities on those cross-court passes, he's automatic. He's such a good shooter, and he's so good off the dribble. He just does everything at this point offensively. He's an incredible, incredible offensive player. Man, he is scary to go up against if you're the Thunder. I thought he played really well in this game. I thought he played really, really well. And I thought the Utah offense played pretty well. But man, the Thunder just, they did an incredible job making shots in this game. So I'll stick in their top five. The Memphis win was a good one, but I think Utah's a better team, and I thought they played a little bit better. The Memphis win was a good one, though, but I think you can argue this one was maybe in that 5-6 range. Boston was a great win with Russ in that fourth quarter. Was amazing, too. But I think you can make an argument this is 5. Probably somewhere in like the 5-7 range. The couple of wins over Boston, the one at the Clippers, the one against Phoenix. That was not a great win. That's just Phoenix. The one against Cleveland, I meant. And the one against Houston as well. I think those probably go on top. But 5-7 range, really good win. Utah's really, really, really good. That's a really good team. It's a good win. They played well. And finally, let's talk about the news from the day, which I haven't even mentioned somehow. The news of the day. Let's talk about it. The Thunder are going to sign Norris Cole. So when they made the trade with Chicago, when they gave up Anthony Morrow and Joffrey LeVern and Cameron Payne, they got back second-round pick and Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott. They freed up a roster spot. 2 point guards, Samaje Christen, Russell Westbrook. They were bringing in a point guard. I know there was talk about them bringing in the other types of positions, other types of players. That wasn't going to happen. They were always bringing in a point guard. They were always going to bring in Norris Cole. Now, as of the time I'm recording this, which is late on Tuesday night, they haven't announced the official signing yet. Shams Charania was the first person to report it. I can report that the terms of the contract are a minimum deal through the end of the year, and he'll be a free agent this summer. Nothing else beyond this season. But they're signing Norris Cole. So Norris Cole, quick background. He played in China this year. He only played 9 games, got hurt, hamstring injury, ended up leaving the team in December because of a hamstring injury and when he suffered that. Before that, he was with New Orleans 2015-16, actually ended up starting because of all the injuries they had on that team. He was traded there at the trade deadline in 2015. Before that, he was obviously with Miami for the LeBron championships, all that stuff. He was drafted first round, I think, 2011, I think is what it was with Norris Cole. He was a really good player at Cleveland State, too. And fun fact, NBA writing career coming full circle. The first NBA article I ever wrote was about Norris Cole. It was when a blog hit me up and asked me to write an article because I was, like, months before the draft, obsessing about how this random Cleveland State point guard was going to sneak his way into the first round. And a blog hit me up and asked me, Hoopspeak.com, which was owned by ESPN True Hoop, asked me to write about Norris Cole. So that's my first NBA article I ever wrote. I wrote about Norris Cole and how Norris Cole was becoming a first-round pick. And then he ended up going first round, 29th. I think he was 29th overall. He was really good at Cleveland State. Norris Cole, I think it was against Youngstown State. This is when I was, like, obsessed with college. Now I couldn't tell you the first thing about college basketball. Back in the day, this was when I was, like, in college. I was obsessed with college basketball when I was in college. And I would sit around and watch the most random mid-major teams no one was watching. Anyway, I was watching Cleveland State. They were really good that year. They won the Horizon League, and Norris Cole won Horizon League Defensive Player of the Year, I think. And he had a game against Youngstown State. We had 41-20-9. Norris Cole had 41-20-9. That was an amazing game. Anyway, Dave Abbott wants to know what the rotation is going to be when Norris Cole comes in, when Oladipo comes back. I don't think he's going to get a ton of minutes next to Westbrook, especially with the way that Alex Abrines is playing. I mean, maybe he'll get some. For the most part, I think he's just getting the backup point guard role. I really think that's going to be, I think Samaje is going to end up dropping out of the rotation because I know they had 14 guys on the roster, and I've said this before, they weren't looking for a 15th man. They were looking for a 9th or 10th man. They had their 15th man, they had their 14th man, 13th, 12th, 11th. They needed a 9th or a 10th man on the roster. That's what they were missing. Just because they didn't have 15 guys, they didn't need a 15th man. They needed a backup point guard because the organization doesn't necessarily value Samaje Christen as a backup. I think they like him. I think they like him defensively. They like the way he fights on the ball, all that stuff. But he's not a backup point guard right now. He's a rookie who's still developing on offense and all that. He dribbles high and he's still learning how to shoot. And Norris Cole is not the best backup point guard in the NBA, but he's an improvement on what they've got at point guard right now. He can guard a little bit. He can guard ones. He can guard twos. He's going to hold his own on that end of the floor. And if you play him 13 minutes, maybe they'll play him some minutes next to Westbrook a little bit because he can guard some twos in certain lineups. I think that's definitely possible. But I don't think we're going to see exorbitant minutes. But I do think we're going to see him getting the backup minutes. So Westbrook plays 35, 36. Then Cole plays 12, 13. Maybe he gets a couple more on average next to Westbrook behind that. But I don't think we're going to see Norris Cole 20 minutes a night, especially with the way Alex Abrines is playing. Now, if Alex Abrines starts missing shots, hits a rookie wall, something like that, which I don't necessarily anticipate happening because of the way he's playing. But let's say he does, you know, maybe things change. Maybe, and Cole plays well, maybe Cole ends up getting more minutes. But at least when he first gets to Oklahoma City, I think that's what we're going to end up seeing from him. Some people have asked me what I thought of the signing. I think it's fine. It's pretty anticipated from my end. To be honest, aren't a ton of really good point guards on the market to sign. There just aren't a ton of guys out there like that who are going to help. I mean, Mario Chalmers is out there, but he's coming off a torn Achilles. Maybe Mario Chalmers isn't all the way there physically. That seems possible because Mario Chalmers, if he's healthy, healthy Mario Chalmers was the better player, but no one seems to want to take the chance on him. Let's remember Mario Chalmers was, Norris Cole was the backup to Mario Chalmers. And now Norris Cole's getting the contract instead of Mario Chalmers, even though Cole's coming off a hamstring injury. So I wonder what the health is like of Chalmers, and that's something I don't know. But he's coming off a major, major injury. So that's something that, I mean, I feel for him. That sucks. But that's something that I'm sure teams are weary about. Brandon Jennings, you know, was waived by the Knicks. He's going to Washington, but he didn't go for the minimum. Cole's coming for the minimum. So you got to only include the guys who go for the minimum. You know, there's Jose Calderon, but Jose Calderon's not going to defend, and the Thunder are going to want somebody who defends. So I don't think he's necessarily an option. Kirk Heinrich, maybe some people think Kirk Heinrich is better than Norris Cole. That's fine. I'm not going to argue with you on that, but I imagine that, like, I wouldn't argue with you if you said that Cole was better than Heimrich too. I just don't think it's that different. It's not like there are any really good point guards out there. Deron Williams had his heart set on Cleveland. That was happening no matter what. It's not like the Thunder had any chance in that scenario. So I think Cole kind of made sense. The Thunder like him. The Thunder, they've had their nose on him for a little bit. Their nose on him? Is that an expression? Do you put your nose on things? I think I just made up that expression. I think I need to go to bed, guys. That's it. I'm ending with their nose on Norris Cole. I'm ending with a nose on Norris Cole. Well, you can remember I'm on weekday, Monday through Friday. You can head out to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ, and log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site, and you can see what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. I am back with you tomorrow. I'm back with you tomorrow. I don't know why I'm asking that as a question. Back with you tomorrow. The Thunder, they head on the road. No practice Wednesday. They're heading to Portland on Wednesday afternoon. Then they got Phoenix the next night and then Dallas over the weekend. 3-game road trip. I'm not going to Portland. I'm not going to Phoenix, but I am going to Dallas. So I'll be podcasting remotely after the Portland game and going into the Portland game, and then I'll be podcasting after the Dallas game from Dallas. But until Thursday's episode, until the preview for that Portland game, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
Finding the love of your life, the ultimate reconnaissance mission. But you did it, and you want to protect the life you've built together through thick and thin. Be their protector for life with life insurance from USAA.
Call 1-800-531-LIFE for a quote.